The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
And a very good afternoon to you. It's Brenda Donoghue here, and I would love your company and your thoughts, of course, on 51551, or you can email me, ray at rte.ie. It's a windy, well, that's me anyway, windy, maybe that's not me, I hope it's not me, washout Wednesday. So please let me know, what are you doing to keep a smile on your face? Or the face of another. Anyway, we have lots on the programme today. Erica Hartigan, a paediatric sleep consultant, she's going to join me in studio, and she helps very tired parents and babies get a good sleep routine. So if you're walking around like the living dead, and I was that soldier, due to sleep deprivation, you've any questions for Erica, get them into us straight away, 51551, or email ray at rte.ie, and we'll put them to Erica a little after 3:30 on the show. Also, we have award-winning stand-up comedian Eric Lawler's in for a chat. And this Sunday night in Poland, 13-year-old Anna Carney will represent Ireland in the Junior Eurovision. We're going to check in with her and see exactly how the nerves are holding up. Now, very quick question for you. When was the last time you cancelled plans last minute? So, you know what I'm talking about. You arranged to meet a few weeks ago. The long overdue catch up was in the diary. There'd been lots of texts back and forth. You're confirming it. Will I, won't I? Anyway, you're all set. The day has come. And the weather's a little bit like today. It's just awful. And you know the rain's going to make the traffic absolutely unbearable. So you send the text. Won't make it tonight. Terrible evening altogether. We'll have to do it another time. So if you've got a mobile phone, chances are you've cancelled on a friend last minute, or somebody has done the exact same thing to you. But as journalist Laura Kennedy says in today's Irish Times, is breaking plans at the last minute rude, or is it a form of self-care? These days, self-care is used as an excuse not to do things and instead prioritise me time. But if self-care is a valid reason for cancelling plans, have we all become less reliable? So Laura says in her article, she says, the phones have given us a way of getting out of plans guilt-free. As years ago, if you made an appointment with a friend a week in advance, you turned up at the agreed time, or you had to sit at home guiltily knowing that your friend was risking their fertility, standing under Cleary's clock in the November chill, and that they probably wait a good 40 minutes before giving you up for dead and then heading home to call your mother's landline. Now, the completion rate for social arrangements has taken a savage blow. It's considered good manners if you text at least an hour before the agreed meeting with a message like, have to slack off, bud. Have you been left frustrated by people cancelling out in the last minute? Or are you guilty of doing it yourself? What do you think? Is it rude? Is it reasonable? Let us know, 51551 or ray at rte.ie. I know I have loads of examples if I just go into my phone and scroll through it where I've actually done it on people and I put my hands up. It is actually, I think, a little bit rude. And I also think if you're single and you're friends with somebody and they're married and they've kids and that, it's very easy for them to use that as an excuse. And of course they have. That's an excuse. You have chest infections, you could have teething, you have all those things going on. But I do think dynamics about messages and turning up, and I think people within a family can take advantage of their single friends. I'm not quite sure. What do you think? So when is the last time you cancelled plans last minute? Share with us now. You know the text, 51551. And I'm getting it all off my chest today. It's just, it's all coming out, right? This morning, as I said, I'm a bit whingy today. It's a bit of a first world problem. But like many people, I need the coffee in the morning. I love my first coffee. And I was in a very long queue. So I waited, and I got up and I was second. And there was a girl in front of me. And next minute, three of her friends came in. They started chatting, how are you? Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Next minute, three friends ordered very elaborate cappuccinos and lattes with gingerbread and the whole lot. And they skipped the queue. They didn't even look behind, give me a nod or acknowledge the fact what they had done. I thought it was downright rude. And as I said, I know it's a first world problem. But what are your experiences of bad manners in a queue or in a line, if you're in America? Of course, we know skipping it. But I was thinking maybe invading your personal space. You know, when you're trying to order a sandwich and maybe you're going to sneak on a little bit of coleslaw and you shouldn't. And then there's somebody really close and they're listening intently to what you're ordering in your sandwich and nearly put you off. Or maybe they're speaking too loudly on the phone. So what is the queue etiquette? What is your experience? 51551. I think that's it. I'm really sorry, Penny and everybody. That's all my grumpiness out of the way. It is done for the rest of the show. Thanks a million for listening. I feel an awful lot better now. But if you want to get it off your chest, we're here for you. 51551. But here's a bit of music just to cheer us up. Ah, that's Lizzo and Good As Hell. That's going to cheer you up. Brian has a really good question and I actually don't know the answer to it, Brian. He says, read the weather forecast. What time is tea time? Now, for me, tea time is dinner time, which is about 6 o'clock. But if you're a farmer, dinner time is lunchtime. So what is tea time? Good question, Brian. If anybody's the answer, do let us know. 51551. Barbara says, hi, cancelling plans can also be due to social anxiety, which is very real for my daughter and something which she loses friends over. Her real friends understand. Thanks, says Barbara. Yes, that is an issue. And hi, Brenda. Yes, I'm single. And yes, people will make child connected excuses if you take the excuses. I don't, so they don't try anymore. They meet me as planned. It is not acceptable to pull out of an arrangement like that. And on the queuing, it is so rude when you're at a checkout, the person behind you is looking over your shoulder. It's downright bad manners, said Nuala. Yes, we're all against bad manners on the programme today. But what is putting a smile on Mark's face in Kinvara in Galway is he's getting the Christmas balls ready for the walk, for the pier in the village. Well done, Mark. That's a great idea. So what is putting a smile on your face on this washout Wednesday? Cheer us all up on the show this afternoon. 51551.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And it's Brenda Donoghue in today. And a lot of people have thoughts about queues in supermarkets. Hi, Brenda. Re-queue etiquette. Can you explain to me why in a supermarket queue, when the announcement is made that an additional till is due to open, people behind me think it's perfectly acceptable to dash in first to the newly opened till? Don't stress much, but this wrecks my head and it happens all the time, said Ger. I have to say I do that myself when you're in the queue and you hear another till is going to open. Or, you know, when you come along, you're trying to judge which queue is going to move quickest. I'm actually getting quite good at the self-service, actually. But anyway, I was paying at the till for a few items. I'm 5'6" in height. And this ignoramus, about 6'2", reached in over me with a paper and paid for it before me. I was delighted with what happened next. When I got out and started to drive away, the yob who jumped the queue had driven over a sign outside and it had stuck under his car. I was delighted. Pay it forward, what goes around comes around and all that. Hi, Brenda. I have a friend who regularly cancels at the last minute. Excuses like, have to clean the house. Once even didn't text, just forgot. We don't bother making arrangements anymore unless she gets in touch to arrange this. One way to lose friends, said Jane in Mayo. And hi, Brenda. What about friends who are never interested in going anywhere you suggest, i.e. go to a show, a comedy night, etc.? I have a friend who's like this. No concept that I might not be able to go if I've no one to go with. Luckily, I have other friends who are more than willing to go places, so I've stopped asking. The last time she said she wasn't interested, I asked her to suggest something. I'm still waiting. So there you go. Sometimes you learn a lot about your friends when they cancel plans or don't agree to maybe do something you want to do just because it doesn't suit them and all that. Keep them coming in. 51551. Well, with Christmas flying in, many of you might be thinking about how to give back to those that are less fortunate. The Fingal Feminist Network have launched their holiday appeal to help make the Christmas period a little bit easier for those living in direct provision. Dr. Lucy Michael joins me on the line to tell me all about it. Will I call you Dr. Lucy or Lucy?
Oh, just Lucy, please, Brenda.
Okay, no problem, no problem. Will you tell me a little bit about this appeal? It sounds very interesting.
I will indeed. Many people don't know, living in the Fingal area, that we have a direct provision centre near the airport at Kobalseskin, and it's one of those that are sort of hidden away and people don't realise it's there. I'm part of a group called Fingal Feminist Network, and we have been looking at how to support people living in direct provision. We spoke with MASI, which is the Movement of Asylum Seekers, last year, and asked them what we could do. We knew that kind of just producing Christmas gifts can be sometimes problematic. People feel that they have, they're obliged to give a gift back, and you know, you don't always buy the right thing and so on. So we asked them, what is it that you need at this time of year? And they said what they really needed was phone cards to call family abroad, because Christmas is a very lonely time. And they want to connect with their loved ones and make sure they're all right. And also just a little bit of ability to cover expenses. When you're living in direct provision and you're on a very low weekly amount, then there just isn't the money to, you know, there's no savings, there's no way to buy the extra nappies you need for over Christmas or whatever you need. And direct provision at Christmas is a fairly lonely, isolated place anyway. So we did an appeal last year. We raised €945 and we bought some gift cards and some phone credit and gave it to the adults living in Balfeskin to help them with those extra expenses over Christmas.
So just to be clear, it's for to give to the adults, not to the children.
Exactly. There are already loads of drives to give presents to children, and this is not about giving presents to the children. They're in Balfeskin, they're already covered. The Jesuits have a lovely Santa appeal, and it's very popular. Everybody loves the idea of giving Christmas presents to kids, don't they? I do too. And I always go out and I buy presents for them, and you try and think of something that they wouldn't normally have or whatever. But what we realised in talking to them was the kids were covered. It wasn't about Christmas presents. It was actually about the fact that over Christmas stuff is closed. It's harder to get places. It's busier on public transport. The weather is terrible. And just the extra expense of trying to put things aside so you have them in the winter is hard on adults who are living on very little money.
I know. I'm thinking of kind of back to school time, because we've just kind of had that. And that is such an expensive time. And then you've got Christmas and you probably have something else kind of coming up in the new year. So these are really expensive times, especially with a family. So I think it's a great idea. What have you talked to the residents about? What have they said to you?
Well, when we last year, when we gave it to them, essentially what happened was, I mean, we raised €945, but that was only turned into about €10 per person. And that's about an hour international call from a payphone. It's not very much. It's, you know, it's barely two bags of nappies. So €10 per person is not a huge amount. When you and I think about Christmas being expensive, we think, oh, I have to get a present for my mum, and, you know, I've got that party to go to, and I'll have to get a new top, or, you know, I'll have to do the office Chris Kindle, and the €10 and €10 and €10 add up. But actually, we're only talking about €10 each that we managed to raise last year. This year, our goal is €3,000. It's still fairly, it's still not that ambitious. It would still end up at being just €15 for the 200 adults living there. But it is €15 more than they would have in their pocket otherwise. And each of them get it. It's for everybody in there. And if we, you know, if you're, any of your listeners want to help us, we have a GoFundMe page. We'll also have the link on it on our Twitter, which is @FingalTogether, which is the Fingal Communities Against Racism page. And we've combined Fingal Communities Against Racism and Fingal Feminist Network are working together on this appeal this year. So we're doing pretty well already. We're about €800 last night. And we would love to bust that goal.
You love it for 5,000. Let's be honest.
Oh, Brenda, like, I would just love to see that go through the roof, because it's such little money for across so many people. You know, and we'll close the appeal on the 15th of December, so we make sure we get the cards, the phone cards and the gift cards to them before Christmas, because it is about those expenses. It's not about spending a gift card after Christmas like the rest of us. It's actually about them being able to get into the supermarket, into wherever they need, get their stuff before Christmas close down comes. So that's what we're doing. There's two amazing people in our network who've been doing this and raising awareness of them, and congratulations to them for doing that. We're just asking people across Fingal to have a think about, you know, if you could just, the extra €10 that you think, well, I might spend it on whatever, just think, actually, that might be the only extra €10 that they have. And we really appreciate every penny that we could raise across Fingal to just give them a bit more feeling of security and less desperation at Christmas.
You know, you're talking about 200 adults.
Yeah.
Okay. I bet you if you gave them, say, a voucher for €20, whatever, I doubt if they'll go in and spend it on themselves. It'll be something for the children, or a present for somebody who's done something amazing, you know, or to make that communication back home. It won't even be for themselves, which I think is just so sad too.
But that's it, exactly it. I mean, look, these are people who can get a clothing allowance if it's an emergency, right? So we're talking about they couldn't go out and buy a new winter coat like you or I can. You know, very often the clothes they're getting are coming through clothes appeals. So You know, €15, it doesn't go very far. It might get you a coat in a charity shop, or it might get you a cheap coat, but it's not going to give you a huge amount. And yeah, like you say, these are not people who are going out and spending it down the local pub or whatever. There really are, you know, adults are living on €38 a week, and it's only that high since May. Remember, it used to be much lower. Balseskin has about 350 people living in it. That's the capacity. And quite a large number of those are children. And, you know, I'm sure that there's parents, but also people living on their own who just are thinking, you know, what am I going to do to get through this period of time? The direct provision centres are not great at putting stuff on at Christmas. Remember, these are private businesses. They're not putting loads of money into Christmas parties or anything like that.
I just wonder what Christmas Day is like there. Have you any idea?
I do, and it's pretty lonely and it's pretty dull. Christmas decorations are not really in huge supply. If they want to get anywhere, of course, public transport is closed.
Yeah.
And remember that amongst those 300-odd people living in the direct provision centre, you could be talking about people from 40-odd countries. They all speak different languages. They all have different cultures. None of them have access to the food that they would have eaten at Christmas with their families. You know, we're talking about people who are being fed, you know, fish fingers and bad pizzas. If you have a look at the Mazzi webpage, you'll see some of the food that's served in direct provision up and down the country. So as much as possible, you know, invite refugees out to your community, dinners, to your community events. You know, pick them up, give them a lift to it, because every bus fare comes out of that weekly
38 euro,
you know,
whatever it is a week. Yeah,
this is it. And some of them are living in rural areas where the taxi into town costs €15, so that's 30 quid straight away. So yeah, I mean, we're trying to think, how do we help in a way that they need,
that's
that they
useful.
Want? Exactly. And so that's what we say. You have to talk to people about what they want, not just arrive with loads of gifts and say, you know, we thought of you and we came up with these brilliant ideas, but actually talk to them and say, what is it that you need and want? And we were really surprised, you know, they said, we just don't want loads of gifts. We don't have anywhere to keep the things. There's very little storage in direct provision. They don't know if they're going to still be in the same direct provision centre the next week. They might be moved. Balseskin has a lot of turnover because of new arrivals. And so, yeah, it's a very insecure life there. So the best we can do to try and help out with those little expenses at Christmas is just, you know, that's what we can try and do at this time of year. And it would be lovely
gift
if some
vouchers
of your
and phone
would
credit.
Help.
Very interesting. I'm just thinking it's the Fingal Feminist Network. How long are you in operation?
Well, the members of that have been working together in different campaigns for a few years now. But we came together really after the referendum last year, because we identified that, you know, there wasn't just those kind of healthcare issues, but there was also other issues for women across Fingal that we weren't really talking about and we weren't really campaigning on. And so we've been loosely moving from campaign to campaign, but we keep people involved through our Facebook page. Fingal Feminist Network uses a Facebook page. And this year we were involved in setting up the Fingal Communities Against Racism with a whole lot of other groups across Fingal. That's a very diverse group now campaigning to stop racist language being used in the by-election. And so we're using the Fingal Communities Against Racism Twitter page, which is at Fingal Together. And we'll be promoting the appeal through that.
And I'm just thinking, Lucy, for yourselves and the other women involved in the network, right? Say we get to 5,000, right? We're aiming for 5,000. That'd be such a buzz for yourselves, won't it? Just to feel that you've done something for somebody else, which is what it's all about, really, isn't it, at Christmas?
I think that's exactly it. And, do you know, the nice thing about working in Fingal Feminist Network and working in Fingal Communities Against Racism, and I say working, I mean, it's volunteer work, right? It's part of community life. And the lovely thing about working with all those people across Fingal is the buzz we share. And, you know, those are really diverse groups. We have very different political opinions sometimes, but we try and come together and do something, because Fingal is a really great place to be. You know, and everybody in our community should be included, including those people who are sitting out the back, stuck out in the reception centre out the back of the airport. You know, they're part of our community too. Their kids are in our schools. You know, they're friends with our kids, and we should be, you know, inviting them into things as well. So this is just one little thing that people can do that's easy. And we'll keep pushing to try and see what else we can do to keep them included. But yeah, you can find us on Facebook or find us on the Fingal Together Twitter.
All right, give it to me one more time, right? So you can go to the GoFundMe page, Fingal Feminist Network, Balskin Holiday Appeal. You're looking for All For One vouchers, gift vouchers, phone credit, all of that.
Exactly. And so anything that people want to just give a little extra change would help hugely. We'd really appreciate it.
All right. Well, Lucy, what a fantastic idea. Good luck to you all there out in Fingal. Let us know how you get on. Keep in touch.
Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, Lucy.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yes, and welcome back. You know what? I'm getting a good humour now because loads of people are texting him what's putting a smile on their faces today. And what's putting a smile on my face today is my four-year-old nephew who has recently been diagnosed with leukaemia, got good test results today in Crumlin. Go, Michael. We love you, says Michelle and Slane. That would definitely put a smile on your face, as it would if you're in Rossbeg Beach in County Kerry. The sun shines and it's putting a smile on my face as I head off for a walk, said Ger Burke. Hope you've got your headphones on, Ger, and you're listening to us while you're having a walk on that lovely beach. Hi, Brenda. This put a smile on my face today. I knew I'd grown up the other day while stopped in the traffic. A rather attractive young lady in high heels walked in front of my car, and the first thing I thought of was, Jesus, she could break her neck with those. Ah, well, I presume that's a female texting in. And here's one, a penny for your thoughts and all that. And it says, I'm on my way to the hospital in Galway to hopefully be told that I'm cancer free after 5 years. Don't worry about the queues. Life is short. Well, it certainly is short. And we wish you the very best of luck. Hope you get very good news there. Patsy from San Diego has been on to say that even though it's raining heavily for the first time in 9 months, she will not be cancelling any plans at short notice. She has a big do to go to today, and she might even do boogie boarding in the rain before her do, but not cancelling. She'll be listening to Brenda over in San Diego. Thank you, Patsy, and a very good morning, evening, whatever it is to you over there. And I am now joined in studio by Eric Hardigan, and she's from Babogue, and she's a sleep consultant, and over the years has dealt with hundreds of babies and tired mums and dads. And Eric has just launched a collection of educational videos called the Sleep Series for parents of babies and children who might struggle to get to sleep or stay asleep. And she's here to tell us more. How are you this afternoon, Erica?
Fabulous, Brenda. Thank you so much for having me today.
Not at all. I hope you can put a smile on some very frazzled parents' faces with some of the advice, because she's here to answer your questions. 51551, email ray@rte.ie. Now, Erica, you got into sleep consulting after your own experience with your oldest son, Quinn.
Yes.
Tell us what you went through.
Quinn is 10 now, and I will say a wonderful sleeper now, as are my other two children as well. But when he was 7 or 8 months old, he was still waking anywhere between 6 and 12 times at night. And the situation was pretty fraught in our house. I actually didn't realise how much of a high sleep need I had personally until this impacted us. And yes, I got through the newborn stage, and yes, I had all of the expectations around what a new child and sleep would bring. But when we still weren't seeing any progress, and in fact, it was getting worse.
Was he waking up crying?
Oh, yes. He couldn't maintain his sleep at all. He would wake every 45 minutes. Sometimes we would get 2 hours. There was no pattern. He would do really, really short cat naps. It was just no structure or routine at all. And anywhere I turned for help, there just wasn't any. So like, I went to, you know, the places you go, your public health nurse, your doctor, your friends, your family. And I kind of kept getting the, oh, it's going to change. He'll grow out of it. It's a phase. You're not coping. Those kind of messages back to a new mum. And it had a really bad impact on me.
You know, just I've been that soldier, particularly with my middle child. But also, like, Quinn was your first.
Yes.
I often think when you've kind of a second or a third child that isn't sleeping, and then you know, it's fine if you can sleep when the baby sleeps and all that kind of thing. But when you've got to get up and you've other things to do and drop and collect and change nappies and do the shopping and then try and have your hair straight, it's just not possible.
And live the perfect Instagram life that all the new mums are kind of trying, I suppose, at the moment. No, the more children you have, and if sleep kind of isn't in a settled pattern, it is even harder again.
Yeah, now, it also kind of ricochets everywhere. I mean, it affects relationships.
100%.
You know, you're shouting, you did it, I did it, I was up last night. No, you stayed up. Well, I'm up early, I can't do tonight.
I think we've all
am I speaking a bit too honestly?
We've all had the argument at the top of the stairs. I have been that person with my husband, and absolutely, it did have a negative impact on my relationships, but not just with my husband. It made me quite insular, so I didn't want to go out of the house. I wanted to stay at home because I was kind of barely coping with what was happening at home. So kind of going out and up the town frightened me a little bit. But my mum recognised that I was struggling, and I'm not originally from Kildare, I'm originally from Cavan. She came to visit me.
But you're obviously very happy in the greatest county in Ireland.
I don't know if my dad would be happy for me to say that, but I'm very happy in Kildare. But yes, my mum came to visit and she recognised I was really struggling, and she stepped in and she stayed with me for about 2 weeks. And she did for me what I now do for families. And she helped me shape and mould and understand his sleep. And I never looked back. It was the best thing I ever
did. How did you do it though?
We put in place a structured routine, not only around napping, but also around feeding, because his feeding was all over the place. I hadn't put any kind of stepping stones in place. And we also worked on promotion of self-soothing and him being able to independently sleep without feeding him to sleep, without rocking him to sleep, without dodying him to sleep, all of those things. And it took time and consistency and patience.
It does take a lot of work.
Yes, it does take work.
And patience. Yeah.
And expectations.
Yeah.
Your expectations need to be real.
I remember with the middle child, God help her now, but I was the only one that could put her down.
Yeah.
Nobody else would she go down for. And it would take 2 to 3 hours of just nursing her at the side of a bed. And then very slowly trying to put her in a cot without waking. And you'd be counting 1, 2, like give her 5 minutes. And then you'd slowly put her down. And just as you'd leave and you'd release the hands from under her body. Yeah. Or you'd be on your hands and knees crawling out of the bedroom so you wouldn't wake them.
Yeah.
And it was just such a difficult time.
And I was that soldier too. I was that person with Quinn. My husband wasn't able to do it. He probably would have. But I believed I was the only one who could do it. And I hear stories like that every day in my working life now from parents who are struggling, where the dependency is on one parent. Sometimes it can be the dad. It's not always the mum. And that they feel this pressure to always be there for bedtime. So their life isn't at all free. They're not able to go to classes. They're not able to have, you know, kind of hobbies or see friends or anything because
you're too
always
tired.
You're too tired too. But if you're spending 2 or 3 hours settling a baby, sure, then it's 9 o'clock and sure, why would you go anywhere?
Yeah.
You know, you go to bed yourself to try and catch up on the sleep. So yeah, they're the types of stories I hear all of the time.
So that led you to become a sleep consultant.
Yes.
How did you, what is that? How do you do
it? Yeah, yeah, I know, what is it? And when I had the light bulb moment in 2016, I did just that. I Googled it. What is it? How do I help families, you know, get more out of their children's sleep? And I went and did that. I Googled and I looked at how I was going to become certified. How was I going to get, you know, kind of a qualification behind this? And basically what it is an education program where we learn about the science of sleep and we understand the different stages of sleep that happen for children between 0 and 6 years of age. That would be what my certification would encompass. So I basically take what I've learned, not only with the certification, but also with my other children, and I bring that to the families I work with. I listen to them. I hear their concerns. I get their emotion. I get a lot of very, very emotional parents who are at their lowest ebb, and I support them in the changes that they want to make within the family sleep structure that they have at home and get them to family sleep goals. And everybody's family sleep goals are different. So I try and respect that and bring them where they want to be. So I don't have like a one size fits all solution. It is really about listening, empathising, creating a plan that they believe in and supporting them in getting where they want to be.
Okay, so if you have a baby, can you train it to actually go asleep a bit, I'm not quite saying a bit like a dog, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
Can you actually do that?
I sleep training is something that I that word or that phrase, it gives me the shivers. I don't like it. You know, because no, they're not dogs. They're people. They're humans, and they're not robots. Mm. They're children. So basically, newborn, no, you cannot train a newborn to sleep. Absolutely not. But you can put in place structures and foundations that will lead them towards good sleep as they mature and grow. As a child gets to between 4 and 6 months of age, their sleep matures a little bit further. And that is kind of a key time where you can mould things even further. And this is something I go through in the sleep series and in the 7 steps to better sleep that I have within that. You know, kind of key things to have in place to allow you bring this to where you want it to be.
Okay, so obviously, if you're going up to 6, between kind of whatever, 0 and 6 months, and then 6 months and 12, you've got different sleep needs and
huge changes.
So what do you expect kind of at the early stages? If we start off with a newborn baby.
Oh, a newborn baby. Well, really and truly, yeah, it's all the growing. It's all about bond. That is what I would encourage any parents to do when they bring a newborn home. Create bond and be there. Get your feeding structures in play. If you're breastfeeding,
you have to give up
your life.
You do. A few nights anyway.
Yeah, no, you do. And weeks. You're absolutely not going to get any what I would call consolidated sleep with a newborn, because really it is about feeding, sleeping with a newborn, and you have to keep on top of that. But by the time you get to about 6 or 8 weeks, really, if you're a breastfeeding mum, you probably have got your skill in relation to breastfeeding there or thereabouts, mm-hmm. and your supply would be in. Really, what I would be saying, start maybe putting a few structures in place. Like, key thing, wake a baby every morning at 7 o'clock and start the day with a feed.
Well, now, my mother would absolutely say, you never wake a sleeping
yeah,
baby.
Never, yeah.
Never.
Yeah, no, you do.
You do?
You do. Absolutely, okay. Because that will create a stepping stone for feeds for the rest of the day. So if you've got a child,
you've this little tot and it's in a deep content, yeah. that you wake it at 7.
I know that sounds,
I couldn't do that.
I know that. And I know that. And I would get that pushback an awful lot. But if you think about it, if you have a situation where you're missing feeds throughout the day with a newborn baby, because maybe they're napping through feeds, where are they going to make up that nutritional need at night?
Yeah.
So if you wake to feed during the day with a newborn, then you may get longer stretches of sleep at night. And I would really stand by that.
So start off
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Feed.
Every morning with a feed.
Every morning.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've kind of got through the day and had the naps that they would have.
Yes.
And then it comes to bedtime, sleep time.
With a newborn, you're not going to have any set bedtime whatsoever.
So we're up to 6 months.
You're up to 6 months.
Yeah, and you're still wrecked.
I would look at trying to establish a 7 o'clock bedtime from about between 4 and 6 months, that you're creating a consistent program or routine to bed. So if you're looking at a 7 o'clock bedtime, you're looking at maybe starting that routine from 6 o'clock, and starting that routine with maybe a bath. And a bath is not essential to get your child to sleep. A bath will not make your child sleep any better, really, or any worse. And also, I would be disassociating feeding from sleep. So looking to feed your child away from bedtime, not feeding your child right up to bedtime and
would
feeding
you feed
them to
in
sleep.
The room.
No, I would actually advocate feeding in rooms not associated with sleep.
Okay.
So feeding in brightly lit living spaces, which is hard to get at 6 o'clock in the evening at this time of the year, but like brightly lit kitchens, because you're trying to, if you think about it, you're not sitting in your own bed, you know, eating or drinking. So if you disassociate feeding from sleep, you're taking out that thing that could be an issue as the months go on.
Why didn't anybody tell me this?
I know.
Years ago.
I know.
So we do have lots of different stages, and they're all covered in your series.
Yes.
And I'll look at them a bit. But what about the trying to get children to go to sleep themselves?
Yes.
Like that self-soothing.
The self-soothing piece. Yes, and this is something that parents really, really struggle
with.
It's
a real moment when that happens. It's like, yes.
Yes. Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And really what I would do is emphasise to parents, before 4 months, your child will find it extremely difficult to self-soothe, because they don't have any sleep cycles or circadian rhythms where their body goes in cycles over a 24-hour period. So expecting your child to be able to initiate and maintain sleep on a regular basis before 4 months is unrealistic. However, it does happen, and then the 4 month sleep regression hits and parents panic. And that regression is due to a progression, which is the formation of the circadian rhythms. So now they have sleep cycles. So during the day, those cycles go every 45 minutes. And during the night, they go every 2 to 4 hours. So you've gone from a baby who maybe could maintain sleep to a baby who now wakes every 2 to 4 hours at night. So that is the ideal time to focus in on this promotion of self-soothing. Now, how you do that is up to you as a parent. How you're going to handle that, and everybody's way of handling that, will be different. But I think the thing to emphasize is there is every chance your child might be frustrated. If you have been feeding to sleep and you change that, they won't have the skill set yet, and there will be frustration at play until they get the skill of sleeping, because sleep, believe it or believe it not, is a learned behavior, not one that every child is born with.
How do you feel about people who say, let them cry it out?
Yeah, I think cry it out gets an awful bad rap. I think it really is up to the parents. Personally, cry it out wouldn't be for me. But if a family came to me and they wanted support on that, I wouldn't judge them on it. But we would do it with everything else in play as well, all the right structures around things, so that the situation is well managed and well watched and maintained.
Well, we have a lot to get through, but let's just look at some of the questions that have come in. Hi, please help. We're sleep training our 21-month-old son, and he will make himself sick when we leave the room or don't hold him until he sleeps. We're absolutely wrecked.
I would change the system that they're using around his promotion of self-soothing or sleep training. It's not suiting him. And I would switch to something that is more supportive. So something along the lines of staying with him until he falls asleep and progressively fading out of the room over a period of a few weeks. This little man, it isn't suiting him what's going on here. And I wouldn't advocate at this age range leaving the room until a child is happy with the changes, the other changes that might be at play around his sleep. Also, feeding him too close to his sleep phase may bring this on, that his stomach is so full when he's going down to bed. So I would again look at this disassociation of feeding from sleep and maybe change that. If he's having a bottle right up until before he goes to bed, pull that back to maybe 45 minutes from bedtime.
I think that's the best. I wish I'd met you years ago. Okay, I have a question here for you. My almost 2-year-old is still breastfeeding at night, could be 2-3 times a night. It's relentless. We never have a full night's sleep with him. I've 2 other children, 4 and 6. Help, I'm exhausted. How do I wean him without stressing him or me out? Asked Susanna in Lusk.
Okay, so what I would look at here is this little man being fed to sleep when he goes to bed? If he is, again, I would look at disassociation of that. And then I would look at the night feeds, and over the course of a few days, maybe time them. See how long he's feeding for, and then look at a process of actively unlatching him. So if he's feeding for 10 minutes each time, maybe actively unlatch after 9 minutes, 8 minutes, 7 minutes, 6 minutes, over the course of a few weeks it could even take. And then you might get into a situation where you can really reinforce no more feeds at night. This little man is old enough-ish to kind of understand a change like that, but it is going to bring frustration.
Do you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking of particularly women, and I know of course men share the burden and the load and the help and all that, but when you have a baby and you got using it, and then you're back in work 6 months, maybe a year, maybe 3 months, whatever it is, right? And you're trying to, I suppose, keep everything going and look professional and be professional, and you might be doing it on only a couple of hours sleep, and because the child is teething or has a chest infection or isn't in the sleep pattern. And particularly now, I recognise it so much in kind of young mums. It's such a difficult time when they're trying to hold all those balls together in the air.
Absolutely. I suppose we're nearly in the workplace expected to work like we're not parents, but we are. And the children really do come first and they're at the forefront. And if you are struggling with sleep at night, you're going to find it hard to operate at your full capacity during the day. Whether you're working in the home or whether you're working outside the home, either way, you're not functioning at your full kilt.
Okay, what are the 7 good steps to good sleep? What are they?
Okay, so look at your sleep environment. So make sure that it's one that is supportive of your child's sleep. Look at the timings around your child's sleep. Try and recognise their natural sleep rhythms within the age range that you have. Look at the napping structure and make sure that, again, that's one that's supportive of the age range that you have in front of you. Look at the milk solids balance. So make sure that you are trying to put structure in play around that so that you're getting as much of their nutritional needs into the daytime so that they're less likely to look for it at night. Look at the bedtime routine. So the bedtime routine needs to be one that's kind of a nice stepping stone through things. Promotion of self-soothing is key. So they really, really need to be independent and guided towards falling asleep and initiating the sleep as best they can themselves, and consistency. Consistency around your children's sleep is key. It's very hard.
And you just give in.
As a parent, I struggle with that. And like, I'm human, you know, I struggle sometimes with consistency around various things with my children. But when I am consistent, I see what good it brings for them and for us.
Okay, so with all the parents that you would have helped over the years, and I was talking about myself, crawling my hands and knees out of a bedroom, trying not to wake the child, what are kind of some of the maddest things you've come across?
Okay, so there's a lot about white noise at the moment with new parents and really being advised to have white noise for their children. And I've had a couple of parents, like this has happened a good few times, where the extractor fan is what they really feel is needed to be on to help their child initiate sleep. Also, getting into the cot with their baby. They know that maybe bringing the baby into the bed with them isn't necessarily what they want, but in order for them to get to sleep, lying down with them in the cot is something that maybe parents resort to. Like this,
I get it.
This is like when you are struggling with sleep, you will do anything you absolutely possibly can to get a good night's sleep. Absolutely.
Okay, lots of queries in here.
Yes.
So I have a 12-week-old. He's a turbid sleeper the first 8 weeks as he needed to eat loads. Since then, he's become quite good, mostly with lots of 5 hours and even a couple of 8 hours sleep. He naps every 1 to 2 hours. There's a lot of detail in this.
Yes.
And goes to bed at 7:45-ish. He ends up having about 4 to 5 naps in the day. And they can be anything from 30 minutes to an hour. Are you following me with this?
Yes.
With 45 minutes being usual. Is this normal or is he having too many naps?
No, Mama. You're doing fabulous. Keep going. You are absolutely rocking it when it comes to sleep. This little man is 12 weeks old. His circadian rhythms haven't formed fully. And he's doing wonderfully. So keep going.
Okay. The Holy Grail seems to be putting them down to sleep drowsily, but awake. So they're kind of in that kind of state.
Awake but ready for sleep,
exactly.
I call that. Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah, it's very, very hard. And I would say this is all about these 7 steps, all about the parameters around their sleep and creating that sleep environment. Basically, you want to make sure that everything in place during the day is leading towards them being ready to go to bed at the right bedtime. And you put them down awake but ready for sleep, and you go on a program of promotion of self-soothing. How you do that is really up to you as a parent, but expect frustration if that's not something your child is used to doing.
Okay, so you have launched these educational videos,
the sleep series. Yes.
Just give me a quick synopsis. What are they?
Basically, they're a suite of educational videos that bring you right through the age range from newborn up to 3 years of age. So it takes into account all the different stages, and basically it is about giving knowledge and education and empowering parents to put smooth and easy to follow sleep structures in their homes. That's what I wanted to do, because everywhere I reached as a parent to try and find information, there wasn't any. So yeah, it's all newborn 4 to 6 months, 6 to 9 months, and right up to 3 years of age.
And say a child gets, they start teething, they're in a structure, yeah. but then they start teething or they get a chest infection and suddenly they get out of it again and you have to start all over again. Or how can you get them back into a sleeping pattern quickly?
I call those blips. So you do, if you're dealing with a blip, you basically deal and meet with the need. Meet the need of your child. And then when they're well and they're through the teething phase, get them back on track again. Go back to what the norm was prior to the blip.
Do you know what? If I had met you when my kids were younger and I had won the lotto, I'd have you in my house every night and just sort it out. It's a pleasure to meet you, Erica.
Thank you.
So it's called The Sleeping Series.
The Sleep Series.
Sleep Series.
Yeah, on baboog.com.
All right. Well, I wish you the best of luck. Great to meet you.
Thank you.
And again, we'll pass on some of your queries and you can answer some.
Oh, delighted.
If you wouldn't mind.
That. Yes, absolutely.
For our listeners, because we've a lot coming in, Erica. It's a pleasure. 51551.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, it is Eurovision fever is in the air once more as 13-year-old Anna Kearney is set to represent Ireland and Poland this Sunday at the Junior Eurovision with her song Banshee. She's very busy at rehearsals, but delighted to say she's taken a few moments out to have a little quick chat with us on the show. How are you, Anna? Hey, Anna.
Hi, I'm very good, thank you.
Good, good. Let me hear you speak again. Your line is a little bit funny. Whereabouts are you exactly?
I am now in the hotel that we're staying in Poland.
Okay. Oh, lovely. And where is the competition on? What's the stadium called?
The stadium is called, the Gliwice Arena.
Very good. So tell me all about yourself and how did you end up representing Ireland?
So we did the Eurovision era in Ireland in TG Cahir. And then after that, after I won, we then got the chance. I got the chance to go to Poland and represent Ireland.
Oh, that's amazing. How exciting was that?
Oh, it was absolutely amazing. It was. I was just so happy because I'd worked so hard and it was just amazing to then get the opportunity to go to Poland.
And you're only 13. I say that now in a jealous kind of a way now. Tell me, who is there with you, Anna?
So with me, I have my mum, my dad and my two brothers. And Leo is going to be reading out the votes from the Irish jury. And I have the head of delegation with me, Fiona Fitzpatrick. And, yeah.
So you're a good party people there. But tell me a little bit about your
mum. Yes, we do. We love.
Yep, sorry, there's a delay on the line, Anna. But can I ask you about your mum?
Don't worry.
Because your mum has represented Ireland in the Eurovision already.
Yes, she has. So she was in 1994, she was in the Eurovision with Riverdance. And she just said that was an absolutely amazing experience. And she's just so happy now that I get to kind of follow in her footsteps and perform in the Junior Eurovision.
Well, that was amazing because I was there and I remember it extremely well.
That's so cool.
It is so cool, but I think your mum is slightly cooler. Tell me a little bit about the song.
Okay, so my song's called Banshee.
Yes.
And it's about overcoming your fears and that with love you can overcome anything you're afraid of. So in our song, people are afraid of the banshee, but with love, you can overcome your fear of the banshee and make it all better.
And it's in Irish?
It is, yes. All in Irish.
All right. Well, hang on. Let's have a little listen to Banshee, sung by Anna Kearney, and she will be representing us at the Junior Eurovision on Sunday night. Oh, Anna, you sound amazing. That has a real Eurovision feel to it.
Thank you so much. I love it.
And how are you feeling about going on the big stage?
Well, I'm so excited now because I had my first rehearsal yesterday and that went really well. The stage is amazing. It is huge. I just can't wait to get on. I just didn't want to come off after I've done my rehearsal.
Ooh, hang on a second.
Another rehearsal tomorrow then.
And just before I let you go, because I know you're very busy, we can all watch you perform on the TG Cahir Player, but we can start voting for you from Friday on Junior Eurovision TV. Is that correct?
Yes, so we can vote from the 22nd till the 24th on the link juniereurovision.tv, and we can now vote for our own country. So we really need everyone to get behind us.
All right, well, we wish you the best of luck. We'd love an Irish victory.
Well, thank you so much.
And I think you're the woman to do it.
Oh, thank you. It would be amazing.
It would be amazing. We will be rooting for you. So the best of luck. That is Anna Kearney. She is out there in Poland, busy at rehearsals for the Junior Eurovision. She will be on the television, TG Cahir, on Sunday. Get voting for her now, juniereurovision.tv. We wish her the best of luck. We'd love another Irish Eurovision victory. Sure, why not?
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
But it's also very nice to meet our next guest in studio here. When he's not making people laugh with his stand-up, he's terrifying viewers with his portrayal of Baddy Cahill-Spillane in Fair City. And he's here now, Eric Lawler.
Brenda, how are you?
Oh, great. I've been looking forward to chatting to you.
I've been dying. It's been nice to speak to you when we're not outside Crow Park.
That's true.
We're always talking on the Marty squad now.
We are.
Kind of thing after Dublin
we are.
Matches. After Dublin, we've usually won the match now, in fairness.
It's quite boring. I know.
But it's nice to be in the warmth of a studio.
It is, yes. And of course, you've gigged for the Dublin team.
Yeah.
You entertained them.
Yeah, I did a gig for the Dublin team, just this whole squad, just before the Leinster final there during the summer. And it was, I have to say, I was really nervous.
Before they went out on the pitch?
Yeah, well, no, they just finished training.
Okay.
And so they'd all had their showers and they were sitting on a grass hill and I'm sitting at the bottom of the grass hill trying to entertain them.
Yeah.
And but the way I got them all on side was I just started slagging Jim. And the lads loved it. And I just basically what I said was, I think in the previous match, Dublin had played Kildare and I think they won by like 14 points.
Right, see you now. Time to go.
Sorry, Brenda, I had to get that
to
in.
Yeah.
They won by 14 points and I remember Jim Gavin's interview, and Jim's interview was, Kildare are a serious side, they're a very talented side. Like, you know, so I was thinking, well, if this gig goes arseways, Jim's going to go, well, Eric's a very good comedian, he's a really, really good comedian, you know. So I knew I was on a win-win situation. Yeah. Like, but I was blown away by the humility of the lads. I was telling you there, Brenda, like the likes of Jack McCaffrey and Kieran Kilkenny coming up to me after the gig and shaking me hand going, how are you? I'm Kieran Kilkenny. He's going, yeah, I know who you are, pal, but just to thank me for the gig. So I love that about them. Like, so it was an interesting
gig. Amazing bunch of lads, and I think people can really see that, apart from being stunningly brilliant players and all that.
They seem to be quite down to earth as
they
well
are.
Which is good. Yeah.
Definitely. Anyway,
yes.
Oh, no, you're not.
Oh,
you're
no, yes.
Panto.
Oh, I know. Yes, I am. Yes,
tell
I am.
Tell us about that.
I can't. Well, I'm appearing in the Liberty Panto this year, Brenda, in the Liberty Hall Theatre, which is in Liberty Hall, which
I
is probably why they call it the Liberty Hall Theatre. And I'm in Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I play a character. I'm playing a baddie, of course, because, you know, Fair City and all that. And I play the Sheriff of Snottingham. Yes, Simon Scowl. That's me. And I notice we're on a radio station here and we can't see any pictures, but if anyone's going on my Twitter account, you'll see my profile picture has changed to my character. And I look like a cross between Jon Snow from Game of Thrones. I'm one of the Bee Gees. It's a beautiful eclectic mix.
Yeah.
It really is.
Lovely. I was actually in Panto in Liberty Hall.
No way.
Yeah.
When was this?
Oh, going back, I'd say nearly 19 years.
Wow. And what was the Panto, do you remember?
It was Beauty and the Beast. And I was neither.
What did you play?
I played one of the sisters, one of Belle's sisters.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
And did you enjoy it?
I had a great time, except it was too hard work.
Oh, why?
I said, if I'm ever going to do this again, I want someone to pay my mortgage. Like, it's simple as that.
Yeah, it is
hard.
No,
I remember you did, I think, the opening show and kind of reach for the stars and all that dancing and everything, and I came off and I was going, oh my god, I have to do this again in 2 hours. And then I have to do it the next day, and then very hard, but great fun.
Amazing
and
fun.
Great to do.
And it does, as like you touched on it there, it's a little step outside my comfort zone as well, because I have to sing a song.
What are you singing?
It's just a song from, it's actually taken from Shrek the musical, but we're putting it into our
Hallelujah.
No. It's about the sheriff of talking about Sherwood Forest and how he's made it a beautiful place and only high standards would accept themselves. It's a great song. Really, it's a real sing-along number. But I'm evil, pure evil, which is great fun. So when I walk out on the stage, I get booed.
Booed.
Boo, boo. Which is no change for me stand-ups as you, Brenda.
No,
I'm only joking. But no, that's the whole thing. But yeah, I can't wait to get stuck in. It's we're neck deep in rehearsals. We kick off on the 19th of December.
All right.
We run till the 24th of December. And as you say, there are matinees as well.
Yeah.
So you're only finished one show. You go out and you grab yourself a bag of chips and then you're back on stage again an hour later.
No, what you need is you need to have kind of a yoga mat and some of those kind of calming candles.
Oh,
and
crystals
around.
And all that kind of stuff. You reckon? Yeah, just to get into the zone.
I wanted to talk to you about kind of starting in stand-up because you were a late comer to finding your calling, should we say. What did you do before you did stand-up?
Well, I worked in IBM, which is a software, hardware manufacturer, one of the biggest computer companies in the world. I worked with them for many years at a lovely job. I was in sales, at a pension, at a health plan. And then Des Bishop rolled into Ballymun a good few years ago now, probably 13, 14 years ago now, with a show called Joy in the Hood, where he went around all these disadvantaged areas trying to unearth new comedic talent. And I auditioned for it. I got the spot in the show, and you know, the whole aim was to do a 5 minute gig in front of your local audience. So they filmed us for 2 weeks doing these workshops with Des, and then going into our houses and finding out about us and all that kind of thing. And then we did the show at the end, and I just got the bug, Brenda. I just really enjoyed it. And for about a year, 2 years after that, I went around and did all the open mics around Ireland. You know, you do gigs for nothing and you hope that you'll impress somebody that they might bring you back and pay you. And then Des was great. Des took me under his wing, brought me on tour with him. So very quickly, I was doing gigs in Vicar Street, the Cork Opera House, you know, big, big venues. I remember doing Live at the Marquee with Des in front of 5,000 people.
And are you married, you might mean?
I am married, I have 4 kids and I'm married. And so that was an even... When the decision came, Brenda, will I go full time?
Yeah, like that's a very difficult decision.
Yeah,
as you said,
when I was on decent money and all that, you know.
Comedian.
Yeah, like, and you don't know when the next pay packet is coming in, kind of thing, you know. So obviously the missus supported the decision. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here today telling you I'm a married man. So, no, she was great. She probably regrets telling me to go for it now at this stage, but I'm still here, still fighting,
still
just about surviving. Yeah. So I'm delighted that it, I mean, I know if I hadn't have done it, Brenda, I'd probably be today.
Would you be a misery to live with?
Probably, yeah. I probably would be blaming somebody for not taking the chance. Mm. Anyone but myself. So I'm delighted I did it. Come here, it hasn't been plain sailing by any means. It's been lots of ups and downs, but you know, I'm doing Panto. I'm on the radio talking to Brenda.
Well, it could be worse.
I'm doing gigs.
But you'd great fun in Fair City.
Yes.
Carl Splann.
Yeah.
That was great. Such a baddie. Just remind us of his character again.
Well,
where he is at the moment. Is he gone? Is he...
Yeah, well, he departed Carrickstown about a year ago. But they've kind of left the door open for a return, hopefully, you know. Basically what he's done the cliche thing. He's gone over to the Costa del Sol to hang out with all the other criminals. So I'm over there drinking pina coladas and plotting my return to Carrickstown. I think that's what's happening. Oh. Now, I did ask RT, would they be into doing a spin-off series?
Over in Lanzarote?
In Spain, yeah. Like an El Dorado kind of thing.
Yeah.
They haven't come back to me yet.
Yeah, I don't. I think if we're selling paintings and all that at the moment, I don't think we'd be quite
Give me a call, D.
In Costa del Sol, yeah. When you were playing Cahill, and he was such a bad boy, people really believed that you were Cahill. You were that evil villain.
Yeah, it's staggering the amount of people who watch it for a start, like, because you can't go anywhere without people stopping you and going, oh, there he is, oh, there he is. And you're like, what? Oh, there he is. And you're, oh, yes, early Fair City. Yeah, I thought I'd done something, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, some people, I'm actually, when you talk about the Costa del Sol, I was over in Costa del Sol 2 years ago doing stand-up. It was an Easter weekend, and I flew out on Good Friday, and Good Friday evening, and the gig was on Saturday night, and I got up on Saturday morning and went down to the pool, you know, loads of people hanging around, loads of
lovely
people, and they were all just stopped going, oh my God, what are you doing? You really are the criminal hanging out in the Costa del Sol. And I was like, no, I'm not actually a criminal. I'm a comedian and an actor, and I'm here to do a show tonight. And it was great because we did the show that night and it was packed full of Irish, so it was a great night, you know.
That's
but
great.
Yeah, just bizarre that people went, oh my God. And like, I've had many encounters like that, Brenda. Like, even in the Omni shopping centre there in Santry a couple of months ago, a little old man kind of creeping up to me, and he looked at me and he scares me. And I went, how are you? Are you that awful beep from Fair City? And I went, yeah. And he went, my God, you're an absolute beep. And then I realised it was serious. I says, hey, you know I'm acting, don't you? I don't give a beep what you're doing. And I says, well, listen, pal, I get a script. I have to learn the script. I can't just make up words that sound nice. Well, I hope they write you a nice word sound because you're a big beep. I just walked off and left me there. And so that's my life right now, Brenda.
So you're going to do your shopping. But are you spending time watching the telly and I'm a Celebrity where your pal, Andrew Maxwell.
The fellow Northside comedian, yeah.
Didgeridoo stuff and all of that.
I know.
Tell you, you're good pals with Andrew.
Yeah, Andrew's. I've done many shows with Andrew over the years and I was shocked to hear that he was going in.
I know.
That.
How did he get the gig?
I don't know. I mean, obviously he has a good agent. But come here, listen. What I noticed was on social media, you know, the vast majority of people don't know who he is.
Mm.
And, you know, you get those people going, who's this guy? Like, you know, and you're going, but I'm kind of happy. I think by the end of the show, everyone's going to know who Andrew Maxwell is. Because not only is he very funny, but he's a very warm, affable kind of. But come here, listen, he drives you mad sometimes. If you're stuck in a car with him for 3 hours, my God, you'd be lucky to get a word in edgeways. Do you know what I mean? He has an opinion on everything and everyone. But he also has a warmth about him and he has that Irish charm about him. And what I love about Andrew as well is that he moved to London, I'd say 20 years ago. He still has the Dublin Northside accent.
He certainly does, yeah.
And he still looks like Charlie Hockey. He still looks like the love child of Charlie Hockey. Doesn't he? Did you ever see him? He's the image of him.
did you know he could do the didgeridoo thing? I don't know if everyone was doing party pieces on I'm a Celeb last night.
Mm-hmm.
And he was playing the didgeridoo.
I didn't see it last night, but come here, listen, nothing would surprise me. Okay. Well, as I said, like, he has an opinion and a knowledge of everything that's ever happened in the history of the world, so I'm not surprised.
Can he win it?
I definitely think he can. I think he could be the dark horse. And now I know everyone's looking at Caitlin Jenner, and Ian Wright as the favourites, and rightly so. They've massive profiles and all that. But I think Andrew could be the real dark horse there. I think people are going to really warm to him and see that he's a nice guy. And not only is that, he's funny as well. So he's a good person to have in camp with you.
Now, you mentioned you've 4 children.
Yes.
And is one of your boys is captain of, is it Bose?
Oh, yeah, Alex. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's well documented if anyone follows me on social media that I'm a big League of Ireland fan and particularly a Bose fan. And Alex plays for the Bose 19s and he's the captain and they play in the Leinster Senior League on the 19s. And he's a great kid. He's doing really well. He's one of 2 twins because you can only have 2 twins, Brenda, you know?
Yeah.
The other twin, Adam, no interest in football whatsoever. Yeah. No interest. But that's what I love about him, the fact that he's not the same.
Yeah.
He has his own interests. So I never speak to him. I'm joking.
I know. You mentioned you were into League of Ireland. Were you at the Ireland game?
I was, yeah. I was there for the... And that's another thing as well, Brenda.
What?
Another time I spoke to you was before the last Denmark game and we got a hiding. We got beaten 5-1.
5-1, yeah. And let's never mention it again.
I know, yeah. Meet you down at the Dublin Hotel
yes,
there.
Yes, yeah.
The hotel. And we did an interview. And it was for television.
I think it was for telly.
I thought you, or maybe
yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
And we did it. And then I was in that hotel again the other night before the match thinking, oh no, this is a bad omen.
It is a bad omen. Yeah.
But come here, listen, it was nowhere as bad as it was that night.
Yeah.
We put up a great show. And we were very unlucky, I think, not to get the win. But listen, we live to fight another day. And I think the optimism is there. And I don't know if you saw the under-21s last night.
I saw the under-21s.
Oh, my God.
Amazing.
You've got serious talent coming through.
That is exciting.
We're going to win the World Cup.
I hope so. I hope so. And if we do, are you going to take your puppy there? Because I hear you have a new puppy.
I got a new puppy, yeah. The miniature Dash one, his name is Louis. And he has stolen my heart, Brenda. And he's stolen the whole hearts of the family. He's given the whole family a big lift.
Is he not a lot of work?
Oh, he's massive amount of work.
Sorry, that's just me.
He is.
Kind of.
Come here, listen, my wife's the same. She's like, yeah, he is an awful lot of work. But come here, I was doing a play at the time, right? I was in a play a couple of weeks ago, 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the family WhatsApp group exchanging messages about a puppy. And I was going, here, hang on a second. Just because I'm in a play now doesn't mean I'm not part of discussions here. Like, you know. And then pictures were being exchanged of this little puppy. And then before I arrived home one night and there he was sat in the sitting room on a cushion looking at me with his big puppy dog eyes and it just melted. I was like, there's no way we're having... Oh my God, look at him. He's amazing. And now he's just such a part of the family. He sleeps with us in the bedroom and all that. And he wakes me up at like 5 or 6 in the morning, like a newborn.
Do you know what you need? We had Erica in the sleep consultant.
I was listening to her, yeah.
You need
a few tips there. Yeah.
Just before we leave and see what you can do.
I know, yeah.
I was going to say another thing to you. You're in movies as well.
Yeah.
I'm just catching up on you, Eric. This is phenomenal.
No, I've done a few short films that have gotten a bit of recognition. I did a short film with Jason Bourne called Sons of Broken Noses. and I got nominated for the Best Actor Award for that.
You did?
Lovely, yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to surprise.
Brenda, thanks for the surprise look in your face there. Oh, yeah, the Underground Cinema Awards, I got a Best Actor nomination. Now, I didn't win, but it's nice to be nominated. And there's another film I've done at the moment, which is going out. It's called 134, and it's about an Irish couple struggling with the gender issues of their son, who kind of identifies as a girl. And I play the bull faced dad going, he should be out playing football, not dancing across the stage like a little, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
and it's a beautiful, beautiful film made by Sarah Jane Drummy, and that's the on the circuit. It's actually doing its premiere in Vietnam this Thursday night. Would you believe? Vietnam.
Why aren't you out there?
I know. Yeah, yeah. I wish that was the deal. Every time you were a part of the festival, they flew you out. But
I know.
Unfortunately, not. It doesn't.
And isn't it amazing? It's funny though that you know you could have been in IBM.
Yes.
You could have missed all this.
I know. Yeah.
Do you
yeah.
ever think like that,
totally.
Eric?
Every time, like you know, I mean, particularly when we have quiet periods. And there's no money coming in. I'm going, oh my God, what was I thinking? I should have stayed in IBM and become miserable, but at least I would have had a few quid.
Well, not saying that everybody there, they're all very happy.
No, I would have been miserable. Oh, I would have been miserable. Yeah, yeah. My head was turned. I needed to get out there and show off. And thankfully, stand-up and acting has allowed me to do that.
And Kamara, when can we see you? What are you up to? I know you're in Panto, which we've said, oh no, you're not and all that.
In the Panto as well, can I just mention one particular day, Brenda?
Yeah.
December 23rd.
Yeah.
50% of all tickets sold that night go to Our Lady's Hospital in Crumlin.
Nice.
So it would be beautiful if people came to see us on December 23rd. I come to all the run, but particularly that night, 50% tickets go to Our Lady's Hospital in Crumlin. I'm also doing stand-up comedy. I'm doing the Laughter Lounge. I have 2 weekends in the Laughter Lounge before the end of the year for that Christmas party nights, and they're always wild.
They are wild.
Raucous.
Will anybody listen to you? I don't mean that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I have a microphone, and even if they don't, I just power through it.
Yeah, well, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks,
it's
Brenda.
always great to catch up with
Brilliant.
You. So the Laughter Lounge.
Yes.
The Panto.
Yes.
And on the big screen.
Yes.
Genie Mackers.
All over the shop I am. Yeah.
All
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, it really is. Eric Lawler, we'll all give him a clap.
Thanks, Brenda.
Well done, Eric. Well, look, that is it from me. Ray will be back in tomorrow. And the Irish Book Awards are on tonight, the Unpost Irish Book Awards. Vicky Phelan is Ray Darcy Show nomination for Book of the Year.
Go on, Vicky.
We wish her the best of luck. It's an amazing book. She's inspired so many people. Whether she wins or she doesn't win, I know she'll have a great night anyway.
Yes.
She'll have the Goona on. And
lovely.
We wish her the best of luck. That's Vicky Phelan on Post Book Awards tonight. That's
Vicky
for me. Ray will be back tomorrow. But right now it's time for Drive Time and Mary Wilson.